Welcome to the Ross Bolin Podcast for episode 80, otherwise known as RBP 80, or 80 deep. Proud of that. Brought to you by Grand X Media. Of course, I'm your host, Ross Bolin, here at the Grand X Media Studios in Austin, Texas, with producer Michael Weiner.
Hey, Ross. Episode 80.
80.
Wow.
It's an accomplishment. I don't know. Every time we get to a round number, it feels like we've done something. We're going to celebrate every single one of those. 80, 90, 240 round numbers. That's what it's all about. RBP 80, by the way, brought to you by Lisa. If you ever find yourself getting distracted, making mistakes at work, forgetting things, a good night's sleep might be exactly what you need. And the key to a great night's sleep is your brand new Lisa mattress. The Lisa mattress is the product of more than 30 years of experience in mattress engineering and hundreds of hours of testing. That's science, baby. Comprised of three foam layers that provide cooling pressure relief so you don't get too hot at night, which for some of you sweaty animals is a real problem. Body contouring, so no matter how tall, short, fat, or skinny you are, it's perfect for you. It gives you the support you need to get the sleep your body craves. Over 300,000 happy Lisa sleepers agree the Lisa mattress gives them the rest they need. Join the Lisa gang today and grab your mattress by going to lisa.com/RBP and trying one risk-free for 100 nights. You can just use the promo code RBP at checkout. Your Lisa mattress will ship directly to your door in a convenient box with free shipping and free returns. And these things are unbelievable. Micah and I have spoken about the Lisa mattress many, many times. We have both been sleeping on our own Lisa mattresses, the Sapira by Lisa specifically, for over a year now. They're unbelievable. I could not think more highly of them. I also love their pillows. I also love their blankets. Plenty of great products from Lisa for you to grab and make your sleeping experience a million times better. Do not miss out on their Labor Day sale. Lisa's Labor Day sale right now has been extended through September 13th. So you got a couple more days there if you're listening on release day, September 11th. You can get up to $235 off and free shipping on the Lisa mattress by going to lisa.com/RBP. It is a lot. It's the biggest discount.
That's a big chunk.
That we have found. LEESA.com/RBP. Enter the promo code RBP at checkout. One more time. That's LEESA.com/RBP. Promo code RBP. RBP 80 also brought to you by Rowdy Gentlemen, which if you're unaware is our in-house clothing brand here at Grand X. You can check it out for yourself at rowdygentleman.com. And just for being a listener of the podcast, for being a member of the RBP gang, you can use the code EATFRESH, EATFRESH, one word, at checkout for 15% off your entire order. Much of our new fall 2018 collection is available now on rowdygentleman.com. More is coming soon. So check out rowdygentleman.com today. Use that code EATFRESH. Gang, 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 15% off, EATFRESH at checkout on rowdygentleman.com. If you're new to our show, every episode of it is broken down into segments, which you can find with time cues down in the description. You don't have to listen to any of the preceding episodes in order to enjoy this one. But if you like the show, go back, listen to all the ones you missed out on if this is your first one, so you don't miss out on any inside jokes or running jokes or priceless knowledge regarding animals, pirates, ninjas, life in general, samurais, Vikings, all kinds of good stuff we talk about here on the Ross Bolin Podcast. You can follow our show on Instagram, at the Ross Bolin Podcast, and on Twitter, at Ross Bolin Pod. We are also on Facebook somewhere, but nobody cares. Every day through our social media outlets, we put out content related to the show, recent segments, we highlight old segments from old episodes, we make very important announcements and shit, we fill up our Instagram story with slides that you, the listeners, the RBP gang, have sent to Micah and I via Snapchat. My Snapchat's at WR Bolin, Micah's is at MicahTX as in Texas. Keep all the snaps coming, and we will screenshot the good ones and throw them up in our Instagram story at the Ross Bolin Podcast. No announcements and amends today. We're going to move straight into the meat and just start eating for RBP 80. First segment, checking in with Bruce and Bella. If you don't know, Bruce and Bella are my two dogs. They get highlighted extensively through my Instagram. That's mostly what my account is made up of, pictures of Bruce and Bella. Taylor and I have these two toy Australian shepherds. Bruce is a boy, Bella is a girl. Bruce a little bigger, he's about 12 pounds. Bella's like 8 or 9 pounds, depending on when you catch her. How many scraps she's found around the house that day. But it was time to update the world on how Bruce and Bella are doing. And coincidentally, had a little bit of a scare last night with old Bella Bear, the little girl. Around 10 p.m., she just started acting funny, like real weird, like kind of stumbling around. And I was like, you know, what the fuck is going on here? And earlier in the evening, my grinder had gotten stuck, which for those of you who smoke marijuana, you know is the thing you put your flower into so you can grind it up, makes it much easier to make a bowl or roll a joint or whatever. It just grinds the weed up real nice for you, keeps it fluffy, and so you don't have to do it by hand, which is much more tedious. Well, mine had gotten stuck, and I was like, what the hell? I can't get this thing open, and there's like a good, I don't know, half a G of weed in there. Good stuff that I just got, by the way, that I was trying to partake in. I'm struggling with this thing, so at one point I Google it, and somebody had advised that I put it in the freezer for like 20 minutes, then take it out, and that would pop it free. So I did that, right? Now, you're wondering how this is related to Bruce and Bella. Well, I think what happened is that when I got it out of the freezer and I was fighting with it, the grinder, and I got it open, it's possible that a little nug may have popped out or something and hit the kitchen floor. Now, Bella will eat anything. I mean, she fucking, all she does all day, her favorite thing to do is hunt for these little acorns in our backyard. They're smaller than normal ones. She crunches them up. She spits them out. She'll do the same thing with leaves in the fall when they fall and they're real crunchy. She just likes crunching things. Bruce does too, but not to the extent that she does. So it's very likely that Bella got a little morsel of weed. She got the dank. And this is just, I mean, I'm smoking good stuff here. This isn't, you know, low-grade swag. This is like the really powerful shit. And she's a very small dog. She weighs like 9 pounds, as I mentioned. So I guess even a little bitty morsel of some alien rock candy, which is what this particular strain is called, gets her really, really stoned. Like, really, really stoned. And it turns out, for like half a day. Not like a couple hours like a human being would be. So this was a bizarre situation. And, I mean, her breathing was fine. But at some point, when she started stumbling around, and then it was like she was having trouble moving at all, and then she kept falling asleep with her eyes open, and she was like laying on her back with her legs kicked up. It was hilarious while being terrifying at the same time, and it's kind of like a moment that I'm not a parent, like I don't have kids, so this is the closest thing I feel to like parental terror. And oh my God, I can't even fucking imagine. Like, this is why I have the utmost respect for people with children. Like, when you get to my age and people start popping out babies, at first you're annoyed. You're like, man, fuck all y'all. What are y'all doing? We're trying to party. You're having kids now? This is bullshit. But then after a while, you just start to respect these people because it's just hell. Being a parent is insane. It's a completely different life. You basically start over. Like, life was great. It is what it is. But then you get to the point when you have kids, and that's a totally different life. The focus shifts completely away from you onto this new human being that you're in charge of. And this is the closest feeling I have to that. So I just wanted to kind of relate it to parents that I don't know how you do it. I mean, I get that that's why you're all an anxious, fucking nervous mess all the time. And, you know, God bless you for everything that you do, because I don't know how you do it. Because I was about to fucking die last night just watching. And, I mean, it didn't help that I was stoned, too, for full disclosure. I was worried. I was scared. I don't know how long if she's going to be okay or what. And weed's, like, harmless for the most part. You can't fucking overdose. But she's my little girl. She's my little dog, man. And it was my fault, is the thing. So when it's like, you know, you feel terrible. Absolutely terrible. Anyway, point being, I just got back literally 5 minutes ago from being with her at the house, and she is completely sobered up, is back to normal, is no longer afraid of, like, the ground. There was a point last night where if I picked her up and tried to move her, when I set her down, she'd, like, jerk as if she'd been startled by something. The thing that was startling her was the floor. So, I mean, that's how high she was. I felt for her because I've been there before. You know, there was like multiple points in my life. One specifically that I can recall in college where I ate too much of an edible, or the person who made the edible more likely was a moron and just made it way too strong. We've all been there too. But where I ended up freaking out for like 6 hours, and it was a living hell. There's no worse feeling. And I did that to my fucking dog. So, yeah, don't call PETA on me. just for the, this was a fuck, it was an accident, all right? I don't smoke out my dogs. I'm not one of these people who does that. By the way, if you do that, stop doing that. The weed's for you. It's not for the dogs. Don't blow smoke in your dog or your cat or your frog's face. Leave the fucking animals be. For the love, they got their own problems. These are for people, the drugs, okay? Don't give your dog shit you're not supposed to give your dog. Don't fill your dog's bowl up with beer because you think it's funny and you're in college. Dude, come on. That's a living, breathing animal that you're in charge of. Don't poison it, ass, says the guy who just accidentally got his dog stoned. But anyway, so that's one update. All right, Bella survived a what I can only imagine was a very traumatic experience with marijuana. Other than that, we moved into a new house now, which I've spoken about, with a front and backyard. Both of those yards are fenced in as we got a new fence put in the front yard. But previously, at our old domicile, we really only had a backyard, and it was xeriscape, so like 100% rock. And if you've never had a xeriscape yard, just Google xeriscape yard. You'll see what I'm talking about. And then make a reminder, like a note to yourself, never to get a xeriscape yard ever because it's fucking worthless. You can't do shit back there. You can't. Your dogs can't run around on the rocks. Your kids can't run around on the rocks. You can't run around on the rocks. You're just wasting footage, square footage. It's a, just a yard gone misused. Don't do it. I'm so against xeriscape. It's driving me, and I understand if you're in like Arizona or whatever, where the sun just fries every living thing on the ground and you can't have grass, that's a different story. I can have grass, and now I do, thank God. But the problem is, when you have no grass and it rains, there's no mud. Ipso facto, I forgot when you have to take dogs outside to use the restroom in the rain, they get all muddy. This is a problem that I am having to readjust to. As in the middle of the night, if like one of my dogs wakes up and needs to take a shit, and I take him or her outside, and I'm barely awake, when we come back inside, I have to remember to wipe off their feet, which often doesn't happen. And then there's just teensy dog fucking footprints all over my white bedspread and my white comforter, and then Tay's mad, and then everybody's just like, oh, what the hell? It's not great. So I'm still getting used to that. It's been raining in Austin all day is the reason I bring it up. As far as their general social skills go, when we have people over, Bruce and Bella still freak out. They still get all shy and they hide and Bruce barks at the, you know, he sees them as intruders. Even if they're best friends that have been over to the house 10 times already, he doesn't care. He won't stop barking unless you make him, put him in timeout, as we like to call it. But it sucks. It's rough for Tay and I because they're legit, like, the best dogs ever. We love them so much and know how friendly and fun they can be. And we wish that we could, like, share their personalities with everybody, but we can't. Like, for example, when our cleaning lady comes over, Bruce acts like a hard ass and barks like crazy at her. She's been to our house 150 times, and he barks like crazy at her. Then when we leave and she stays to clean, guess what happens? He's fine. Totally stops barking. He'll like walk around the house, hang out with her, sniff her. He's full of shit. He's a faker. He secretly loves her. He just wants us to think he's doing his job. Bruce is doing like the employee equivalent of like answering an email on a Saturday afternoon with the least effort possible to make it seem like for your boss that you're working, but really you're not. That's what Bruce does anytime a human being that he isn't me or Taylor steps foot into our house. It's fucking hilarious. It's just fake effort is what it is. Wants everybody to think he's hard. He's the size of a squirrel and he's out here acting like, you know, Mr. T. It's insane. So he still does that. Tomorrow, Bruce and Bella are going to be taking a little trip in my Lexus sedan to stay with their grandma. Me and my mom sometimes, if our dog sitter is unavailable, because these two are so particular and weird and fantastic, then I have to take him to stay with my mom if Taylor and I go out of town. And we are this weekend. We're going to California. So I get to make the drive to meet my mom halfway. We actually meet up at one of the kolache shops that Mike and I have talked about on the show. Or Klobus Neck. They have those too. All right. We're going to be correct with our terminology henceforth, as promised. But what's that one called, Mike, on 71 that's halfway?
Slovax.
Is that the one that's halfway to Houston?
Yeah. Wait, no. No.
You know what I'm talking
about? No, Hruska's. Hruska's is
Hruska's, yeah. Yeah. Yes. It has an H at the front, and then Ruskas or something like that. Hruska's. Thank you. I'll be meeting her, my mom there, and turning the dogs over to her, and they will be her problem for the next few days. Which, just for a second, thank you, Mom, for being there and doing that for us. It's unbelievably helpful. Like, my mom knows how much we care about our dogs and how particular and weird they are, and they love her, and she takes great care of them, and we very much appreciate it. She also has a dog of her own now that she rescued, like, I want to say 2-3 years ago now. I don't know. I'm terrible with time. She's probably yelling at my podcast speakers as we speak. But she's got a little dog named Audrey Hepburn, who is a miniature schnauzer rescue that she literally brought back from, like, the brink of death, basically. She'd been, like, horribly abused and mistreated, and now she's in great shape, living life. She got 3 stories to run around in my mom's townhouse, and she's great with Bruce and Bella. They love her, too. So just a good dog situation, and there's no better way to start a podcast than by talking about a good dog situation, because what we're going to bounce to next, the next segment, is a little more real and a little more emotional, all right? Next segment, Never Forget. Today, as we all know, is September 11th, 2018. It's the 17-year anniversary of the tragedy that took place in New York City when the Twin Towers, the World Trade Center, was attacked. So I want to discuss it a little bit. I don't think that's something that you can just let pass, or that we should ever let pass without remembering. I mean, that's why the slogan is Never Forget. That's, for all Americans, this was a day that changed things forever in a lot of different aspects. And for me personally, I can still vividly remember that morning. And I mean, I guess, is it 17 years ago? Am I doing math correctly?
Yes, you
okay.
are correct.
So I just need math confidence that I don't actually possess. But being at the age I was at, I was in high school, and I believe I was a freshman in high school too. So it just, like, a crazy time period in my life already anyway. There was, like, you know, the hormone, going through puberty, growing like a foot in a year, that's a lot. Got all the hormones going. We had family stuff at home with my parents' marriage. It's just a vivid period of time for me, right before I, like, dove headfirst into the drugs to numb the pain, that I can remember specifically. And on this day, on September 11th, 2001, I was late. I woke up, like, a little bit late. Me and my dad were rushed. We're trying to get to school on time. We're going to be late for sure. And as you know, when you're late in high school, you get, like, a fucking, what do you call it? They give you a mark or a something, and if you get too many, you get suspended or you get put in school suspension, ISS, or whatever. So we're in a hurry. We're running. Me and my dad get out to his truck. We turn on the radio, and before we can even drive away from the house, we hear over the radio that a plane has hit this building in New York City. And I didn't even know, really, like, what the World Trade Center was. Like, I mean, I'd heard of it, but I'd never looked into it. I'd never learned anything about it. I didn't know how many companies were in those two buildings or how big they were for world economics or anything like that. I just knew they were two big-ass towers that were very, that stood out on the skyline of New York City. And so we hear something, and my dad is the one who, like, realized the impact of it, the, you know, severity of the situation. So we go back inside for a few minutes and turn on the TV to get a visual. And we see the first tower with all the smoke coming out and everything. And it was just like, I had never seen anything like that in my life, ever, at any fucking point. A building of that size with that much smoke coming out in the middle of a city that, to me, was like this untouchable bastion of American greatness. And it was just confusing. So we go get back in the car. We're listening to the radio on the way to school and whatever. And it's becoming more and more clear that something is going on. It wasn't obvious that it was a terrorist attack yet, because that wasn't really something that came to the forefront of our minds as Americans at this point in time. And for those of you who are too young, which is a lot of you listening, those of you who were probably like 5, 6, 7 years old when this happened, it's hard when you're that young to grasp the magnitude of an event, right? Like, I'll give an example. When I was young and the Rockets won the championship, the magnitude of that event then to me as a child compared to what it would mean to me now as an adult is vastly different, because your understanding of how difficult or tragic or great something might be is so different when you're a kid than when you're an adult. So I just didn't really get what was like, I didn't know what a terrorist attack even really was, but I knew something had gone horribly wrong. So then we get to school and we're in first period and the second plane hits. And that's when like all hell breaks loose, right? Everybody knows that this is organized, that somebody has executed an attack on these two buildings. There's no coincidence that results in two different commercial airliners hitting buildings right next to each other. That just doesn't happen. Hitting one building doesn't happen. Two can't be a coincidence. Something's going on. Everybody's freaking out. The school gets locked down from first period on, basically. And I spent almost the entirety of that day, of the school day, in my history classroom. That was my first class, my first period of the day, which was equipped with a TV. And so we just had the news on. And the whole class just sat there in complete fucking silence. Teachers at his desk in silence, staring up at the TV too. And we're just taking it in, trying to figure out what the hell is going on, watching the country change forever right before our eyes. And I can still, the part of it that stuck with me the most is the mood. Like the, you know, the feeling in the air, like the aura of not just the room I was in, but you could feel that it was bigger than that. Like it was the whole school, and then it was the whole neighborhood, and it was the whole city, and it was the whole state, and it was the whole fucking country. All of us got put into the same spot mentally, and that's something that happens so rarely, where the whole world stops and is watching this one thing. And that was the thing to me that it tipped me off to the magnitude of the thing, of the attack. That's what gave me the feeling of like something horrible has happened here. Is I could just feel it in the air, in everybody you talked to or looked at, the look in everybody's eye that day, later that day, the next day, as people were really starting to have it soak in. And it was just horrible. It was unfathomable, this thing. But then the beauty of it was the aftermath, right? It was the first time in my lifetime that I experienced something so horrible that brought people together in such a powerful way. Like the whole fucking country basically treated every day like it was the 4th of July for 2 years. No one didn't have an American flag in their front yard. It was the brutality, the inhumanity, the viciousness of the event that caused this moment of great healing and togetherness. And that's the moment that I figured out what America was supposed to be and what this country stood for and what made us different than other countries is the feeling of team first, basically, of family. That's what it is. We're one great country with differences in belief, in politics, in fandom, in religion. But when push comes to shove, we're all Americans. And it gave us that moment. It gave me, personally, the first time that I ever really felt that and knew what it meant to be an American. And it's the silver lining that I will carry with me for the rest of my life, is knowing that if shit hits the fan, push comes to shove, I'm in a place where people don't back down or lay down or give up. I'm in a place where people run into the fire, run into buildings that are coming down to save lives, that will help their neighbors, do whatever they can to serve the community when it's really necessary. And we can be real pieces of shit a lot of the time. We all admit that. Human beings as a whole, we can suck. Americans, probably more so than anyone, because we're given such a great amount of... I mean, we're a blessed nation with money and materialistic things and technology and prosperity and, most importantly, freedom. And it just... That day will forever leave me in awe of what we're capable of as a country, and that the rampant patriotism and the coming together of the entire country was like, I mean, it was one of the most beautiful things I think anybody could ever see in life. Micah, do you remember specifically where you were when you realized something was going on and how it unfolded for you for the day?
Yeah, I was in high school, I don't remember the moment that things really started to happen, but I remember that we were in, I spent a bunch of time in the library that day for some reason, and then we spent the
try last, where they just had all y'all.
Yeah, the last period where we just all went, we took classes sort of as usual, but people were confused.
Yeah.
And then we, the last period, we just sat in one of the classes and watched Fox News and watched sort of all the TV coverage, which we hadn't really sat down and watched.
Yeah.
Which is weird thinking now, like everybody's got a phone. And if this happened today,
we'd all be watching it on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat.
We would have
Instagram,
seen the clips
5 million
times. And
but that wasn't the case.
It really wasn't. So like even if we had like a TV in the library, I think we kind of were kind of snooping, but you didn't. It's different than sitting there and sitting down watching and learning as much as you can.
Yeah, and you're
know?
Not you're not all getting different live updates on your own terms via social media. You're all looking at the same medium, the television, and you're getting the information visually and audibly at the same time. That's a great point. The state of technology in the country was not the same as it is now. So things like, you know, now when we have something horrible happen, God forbid, like a school shooting or whatever, people go to Twitter, people go to Facebook, people go to Instagram. This was you go to the TV and you turn it on and you all watch together. And I'm with you. That was surreal. Like 30 kids in a room watching this tragedy, this attack, and none of us had any fucking idea what to make of it. It was like, okay, well, how bad is this? What does this mean? Like, are we at war now? Like, who the fuck did this? I didn't even know who Osama bin Laden was at that point.
Yeah.
I wasn't even like really aware that there was a real issue with Al-Qaeda. I didn't give a flying rat's ass about the Middle East other than that I knew my Mimi and Papa lived there at one point, and it probably wasn't a good idea for my white ass to go over there. That's all I knew. And if you think about that in perspective to like where we're at now, just the vast amount of changes that took place, even from a security standpoint, like airports were a completely different place.
Well, that was my immediate feeling in the aftermath. And it took a couple days, but it, you know, like I was just like everybody else, a young kid. I was just like anyone else. Everyone was scared.
Oh, yeah, you know? Dude. It was terrifying.
My feeling was fear in a way that, well, they'll be able to do this whenever they want. Like we can't.
How do you stop
this? This isn't going to change the way that we operate. Like, you can't change the will of one person to be a suicide. Like, a suicide mission is something that is something that you can't, you know, game plan against.
So hard
to
prevent.
For lack of a better
term. Yeah.
But shockingly, to me anyway, the fact that we're in this place now 17 years later, there have been many terror attacks. But
yeah.
Certainly nothing on a scale of this level in America, at least. And it's, you know, I mean, there's a lot of ways to think about what that means, but it is a testament to our leadership as a country,
it really,
as a nation, the fact that we've been able to keep our people relatively safe.
I think we struggle as an American society to really give our government credit for anything because they do so much that pisses us off and
right.
frustrates us. This is certainly an example of something that, at least so far, history has told. And it's not that there weren't struggles along the way. There certainly were. There are things that took place as a result of 9/11 that are very tough to justify. There, innocent people died elsewhere in the world.
Absolutely.
As a result of us retaliating. Now, that's not an argument. That's just a fact that literally it has happened. Now, there are varying degrees on what people believe we should and shouldn't have done. And I'm not going to get into the weeds here, but credit to our government for what you just pointed out. I didn't think it was going to be possible to thwart as much as they have thwarted.
Yeah, it really, and we'll never know about 1,000, you know, 99% of the
that's
the
a crazy
that
thing to think about. Yeah,
avoid. You know, I mean, people might say, well, the fact that we have to go through security every time we go through the airport, we have to take our shoes off, all this stuff proves that, you know, they've changed the way we live. And perhaps that's true. But I think that we're certainly at a place where there are certain things that we take for granted that we used to, you know, it's just, it's a different world. And we've adjusted. And obviously we don't we're not here to talk about the Patriot Act or, you know, civil liberties or whatever it is. But
God,
the reality is the fact that a large scale attack like this has been avoided, and not just here but all over the world is pretty amazing. And so that's something to be thankful for. But, you know, the other thing is, I remember I had a teacher. He was like the drama teacher at our school.
Okay.
And so I didn't ever like really interact with the guy, but he was a mess. Everybody else was just kind of like so shocked. But, you know, he had been living in New York, and like he previously lived in New York. And he talked about how his subway station was just down the street, or, you know, that's where he operated. And for like at the time, that didn't really mean much to me.
Right.
And I remember thinking like, you know, whatever. But then you get around New Yorkers and you go to New York.
Yes.
I'm sure you've been to New York since then.
I have once.
And you hear a plane flying by and you get a little nervous. And, you know, I know a lot of people from New York, and everybody's got a 9/11 story, not just where they were, but they know somebody firsthand
that was
who
affected,
was killed, or their husband was killed, or whatever it was. And like, it's, and once you're there, when you're, not only are you, the first time a plane flies by, you're a little nervous. I know I was. But when you just see how enormous and how on top of everything the city is, like,
yeah,
what a wild, it's crazy. And it's crazier when you're there. And I went to the 9/11 memorial. I don't know if you've been there in New York.
Yeah, it's pretty moving.
I didn't go through the tour and didn't get a chance to do
that. No, I just saw it.
When you just go down there and you walk around and you see the size of these buildings and the footprint that they had, which is now like these sort of reflection ponds.
Right.
It's an amazing... The magnitude, it's bigger when you see it.
For guys like, you know, Micah being from Austin and myself being from Houston, Houston is a sprawling metropolis. There's not a lot of really tall buildings. It is the opposite of New York City in that it's as spread out as it could possibly be. And I'd never been to New York City before when 9/11 happened. For Micah, Austin at that point in time, even compared to what it is now, was a town. I mean, it was a city, but it was...
Well, we had almost no downtown.
Downtown,
there was really no growth in
the
downtown.
The skyscrapers barely existed.
So, yeah.
It's a completely different place. So this isn't something that Mike and I were even able to like envision. And then you're absolutely right. The first time I went to New York City, which was just a few years ago, actually, I had never gotten the chance to go, and I finally did. It's mind-blowing to imagine. When you're walking the streets, one of the first things that happened to me, I can't remember what street we were on, and I'm terrible with directions, so I'm not even going to try, but... I looked down the street, and the first thing that popped, and I had the view of, you know, all the skyscrapers lining on the left and the right, and I had the view pop into my head that I saw on the news on the day, on 9/11, of all the people running and the smoke, and it was just like, holy shit, this is where that happened. And it is, in hindsight, as an adult being able to look back at it, such a different deal for New Yorkers than I think anyone could ever understand. I mean, if this, even having recently, like, okay, Hurricane Harvey floods out Houston, which is my city, right? It's a fucking tragedy. It's a mess. It's going to be years and years before it's all fixed. But that hurt, like, for me personally. And I don't even live there anymore. None of my family even got flooded. And I was still just like this unbelievable deal for my city. I can't imagine that the exponential, I mean, you feel violated as a New Yorker on that day. Like somebody has come and personally attacked you. And it felt like that for all Americans, but I think for New Yorkers, for those of us who are so far away from New York, or those of us who had never been there, it wasn't possible for us to understand the kind of people that New Yorkers are, the kind of city that New York is, and how it made this even a bigger deal than it was by watching two buildings fall. And what you spoke to, where the buildings actually were, physically stood, that space is so much smaller than I imagined in my mind because it goes straight up to the sky, right?
Right.
Like, and I don't even know what to call the chills, like that, you know, the hair standing up on your arms you get when you see something that just like blows your mind. looking at those plots where the buildings were was one of those moments for me where I was just like, I can't. It's so strange to be standing there where you watched this thing unfold on TV as a kid. And yeah, I mean, credit to New York City will always have my respect for being what it is, for being such a melting pot and having so much cool stuff going on and just being kind of the, you know, it's like the mascot for the United States of America in a lot of ways. But this, when it happened and when I've had time to grow into an actual, like, you know, I like to think of myself as a well-rounded adult who can understand or fathom things like this a little better, it put it in a whole nother light for me, what these people went through as a city and what they, how they were able to just push forward while fixing it at the same time. There's so much to be learned from that. And we'll actually talk about it a little bit more later on the show with another segment that relates to this, but it's a day that we should never let pass by without at least thinking about where we were, how it went, and what the impact was, and how we can continue to learn, not just on like a governmental level or a security level, on a human level, what things like this mean for not just for our country, for all countries. When you see something horrible happen somewhere else, you should remember we're not the only country. We're not the only humans that exist. And we got to help out other people when they go through bad shit too. That's the other thing I would say. The last thing I'll say to take away from 9/11 is that remember it, learn from it, honor the people we lost, respect the people who helped and helped us to overcome and get through it as a country. But also remember, when tragedy takes place, humans need help from other humans. Reach out and do what you can to help people when things go horribly awry. Mike, any other thoughts on 9/11?
Yeah, that's really well said. You know, you talked about how we all came together as Americans and all that stuff. The other thing we don't really think about as much, or I think can be overlooked, is how the world kind of came to help us.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it's another reason that when these terrible things happen, and we're talking about terrorist attacks here, but I mean, really anything.
Natural disaster, terrorist attack, sure. Whatever it may be.
That it's important that we keep a scope that, one, like, these are our friends. And two, this could happen to us.
Oh, yes.
We had a guy fly a plane into a building in Austin.
Yeah. The IRS guy.
Yeah, the IRS guy, which was the single most shocking thing. It was my last day in TV news, actually.
Oh, shit.
Seriously, my last day at the TV station. And I got a phone call. And I remember getting a phone call from our reporter who went straight to the scene. And she was the first one there, and she said, like, stop everything you're doing. And she was crying. And she was a steely, like, hardened professional. She's like, this is terrible. This is tragic. This is bad. And, man, was it. And shockingly, only one person died from that, and the pilots of two. But, and that, when you see it, when you saw that building.
Yeah.
That was on fire. And I still have no idea how there weren't hundreds of people killed that day. This stuff is humbling.
You hate to say that we got lucky, but we did.
I'm sure we're getting lucky every day.
Absolutely.
And 9/11 was a wake-up call and was tragic. But, you know, if nothing else, back to what I was trying to say, I guess, is some compassion and some understanding that we're not the only ones fighting this kind of stuff.
No.
And we're not the only people that terrible things have happened to. And the rest of the world reached out to us, and we need to keep that in mind when we reach out to others when this stuff happens in another place in the world.
And it's also like, if you think about a family unit, like your family, when something bad happens, whether it's you lose a loved one, maybe a pet dies, or somebody gets sick, or your house burns down or something, you come together and you help each other and you're on the same team and you take care of each other. You're just looking at a bigger version of that when you look at a country and a citizenship and the world. I mean, we're all in this together. There is no real differentiation between any of us at the end of the day. We're all on the same spinning globe, and it's up to all of us to help each other and make this as you know, easy of a path as it can be. And I just, the other thing you brought up, that it's insane to think about how many things have been thwarted since 9/11 as a result of the hard work of our security, different agencies, the CIA, the FBI, ones that we don't even fucking know about.
Yeah, that's for sure.
There's a lot of moral ambiguity with a lot of this shit. There is. Let's not pretend there's not. But I just can't imagine, like, does Trump get to know all the stuff that gets avoided? I feel like my head would explode. I can't, like, that's the one thing about being president that I can't wrap my mind around is, like, the day they sit you down and walk you through all the shit that nobody else knows that you now have to shoulder. And I don't know how much of that there is realistically. It's probably spread out. You know, it's not like they just take Obama or Trump or Bush or whoever, Clinton. It's not like they take the president into a room and just give him all of the information. But somebody has all of the information. It might be spread out to more than one person, but it's out there in the government. People are having to handle this shit. So that's just crazy to me. The scope of the amount of people it takes and the technology it takes to avoid something like this happening in the future.
Well, and that was one of the, there's been a million books and things written about the aftermath of this, but apparently one of the great, I won't say triumphs, but lessons learned from this is that our intelligence community has to be working seamlessly.
Yeah.
And it's more than just our, we shouted out our government earlier, but it's so many people that we never know of, the spies, the intelligence community, the people that are working all over the world to protect us, keep us safe, and that are working and talking. And, there was a lot of stuff at the time where the FBI had stuff, but they wouldn't share it with other things.
Yep.
And I think we're at a place that the fact that we don't hear about these things every day means that we should take a second, especially on a day like today, and think about all the people that are out there working to protect us.
And let's close.
And it's more than just the fucking politicians in suits.
Absolutely.
It's the guys and women all over the world. Those in uniform, those undercover, those, everywhere.
Well, let's end on that with a massive, endless thank you to first responders, the police, men in uniform, whether it's firefighters, whether it's medical assistants, but doctors, the soldiers overseas, the troops, everyone who does their part so that the rest of us, like me, can sit here and talk into a microphone. There will never be enough gratitude that we can express to you, but thank you for everything that you do. And we'll move on from there. So, on a happy front, with some good news, Fulton and Rourke just launched their lotion, and it is incredible. It's sad that, men just don't take care of their skin the way women do. We just don't. We're morons. We're idiots. We're oblivious fools who ignore the fact that the drier your skin gets, the faster you age, the older you look, the less women will want you, the less men will want to be you, and just the sadder your life becomes. That's why you need Fulton and Rourke's new body lotion that absorbs quickly into your skin, quenching your skin's thirst and delivering vital nutrients like vitamin E, sage, and rosemary extracts, keeping your skin healthy and elastic like it's meant to be. Plus, as is the case with all of Fulton and Rourke's products, this lotion is the best smelling stuff available. These guys at Fulton and Rourke have been given awards from GQ, Men's Health. The Wall Street Journal just acknowledged their 2-in-1 shampoo and body wash is fantastic. Plus, everything they make comes with a 30-day no questions asked guarantee. All you have to do is hit FultonandRourke.com and use the code RBP at checkout to get 15% off your first purchase. If you're looking for a solid cologne recommendation, Sterling is a great pick for fall, which is just around the corner, with notes of tobacco, leather, and vanilla. What a trio. Tobacco, leather, and vanilla. That's what I always imagine Tom Hanks smells like. Don't you think that's probably what the Hank
smells
like?
Something along those lines, yeah.
Yeah. So go to FultonandRourke.com. That's FULTON and ROARK.com and use the code RBP at checkout for 15% off your first order. Grab some of those face wipes that Mike and I praise endlessly. Smell good, feel good, make sweet love to a lingerie model on a pile of money. Next segment. Why people wear glasses over contacts? Since I was a little kid, I have worn contacts since like 12 years old. I am blind as a fucking bat. If I took my contacts out right now, Micah, who is sitting roughly 4 feet from me, would look like a blue blur. He's wearing a blue polo. I legitimately can't read things within 10 feet in big letters. My eyesight is shit. I don't even remember the number, so don't ask me for the number. I don't know. But I'm probably as close to legally blind as you can get without being legally blind. I can't drive without contacts or glasses in. I can barely walk. I certainly can't watch TV. I'm blind. I have terrible vision. And just as an aside, as a little kid, I also had the worst teeth I have ever seen. Like, think of Austin Powers. That's what my teeth looked like, minus the plaque. They were completely fucking out of whack, pointed in all these different directions, just absolutely terrible. Terrible vision, terrible teeth, chicken legs, golden dick. That's how the doctors described me. But I digress. So when I went to the doctor for the first time to get my eyes tested, and they were like, holy shit, you're blind, and they prescribed me contacts, that became the new normal for me. I never really had an issue with, like, taking the contact out, putting it in my eye. I'm not like one of the people who's freaked out by touching their eye or poking their eye. It never really bugged me all that much. I was just psyched to be able to see. Like, the first time I walked outside after putting in contacts, I vividly remember being like, holy shit, because I had never seen the world in that vivid detail. It's like watching HD TV for the first time. For those of you who have good eyesight and just have 20/20 vision or whatever, good for you, fuck you. You have no idea what I'm talking about. But that's the closest thing you can compare it to. Go watch a 1998 television and then go watch a 70-inch 4K television. That's the difference between me without contacts and with contacts. So I never really wore glasses. Like, they gave me a pair when I bought my first contacts, and then 2 weeks in I stepped on them or something, and then I never went and got them fixed. I never really cared. I went years without owning glasses again at all, which, by the way, is terrible for you. Don't do that. It messed up my eyes. I almost got a detached retina as a result, and I had to have laser surgery to fix it, which was tight. I've never had LASIK, and I don't plan on it because it's really expensive and I don't trust doctors, but this dude that had to zap my eye with a laser to fix this almost detached retina, this was one of the coolest things. It's freehand. He did it with a fucking magnifying glass and a laser gun. And I'm just laying there like, well, I hope he didn't shoot the wrong part. And it worked. He fixed it. I don't know. Doctors, man. I love and hate you all at the same time. All of this is to say, a debate broke out in the office yesterday as a result of a tweet from one Dan Regester, who you might be familiar with. He hosts Backdoor Cover, our sports podcast here at Grand X, that I am also a co-host of. Dan is a contrarian, noted contrarian. He has very bad takes, often ones that are the opposite of the majority, just for the sake of being that guy, the contrarian. And he's hilarious. But he tweeted out, "We really going to give people with glasses the benefit of the doubt in the intelligence department when they can't even figure out contacts?" And look, that's a joke, and it's obviously Dan taking a shot at people who wear glasses and getting some engagement out of the internet on it. It's a good tweet. But it really made me think. I've always wondered this, and I never wanted to ask because I didn't want to insult people or hurt their feelings. Like, even Joe, one of the guys I work closely with every single day, he wears glasses every single day. He could wear contacts, but he chooses glasses. I've never understood that. Like, people who wear glasses instead of contacts. Because it's like, why would you wear the thing that obstructs the view of your face for other people over the thing that no one can even tell is in your eyes? I've just never been able to make sense of it personally. So this was a interesting tweet to me that inspired an interesting debate, in not just on Twitter, which you can go look at all the replies to Dan's tweet. He's like at Dan_Regester, I believe. Dan, I can't believe I'm plugging you this hard on the show right now. Buy me a ice cream cone or something. But Micah, what's your eyesight like? I think you never had eye problems, right?
No, I think I have excellent eyesight.
Yeah, it must be nice.
I have a superhero power.
Okay.
And that is, I can see details from long distances away better than anyone I know.
That's a great superhero power.
It is so dope to be like at a crowded bar
and know the score
and
of a
look
game
at the TV at the far corner and be able to see the score and the time remaining, and people be like, wait, what? And I'm just like, yeah, you can't see that, and no one can see it but me. It's magical, actually.
I know that I've had a couple of moments like that in my life where, with my contacts in and my vision being perfect, I was the guy who could see the score, and it was such a good feeling. So I envy that you've always been able to be that guy. But then also, I'm trying to, if we were at a bar watching a game on a TV 15 feet away, and it was a smaller TV at a bar that wasn't meant for sports viewing, and I didn't have my contacts in, I couldn't tell you the difference between rugby and bowling. So props for your wonderful eyesight.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoy it.
That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, yeah, but okay.
I'm thankful.
Here's my question. I want people who wear glasses over contacts to call our hotline. 888-WR-BOLIN is the hotline number. I want to hear your thoughts. I want to hear your reasoning. I'm going to be listening to all of these hotline calls, taking the best ones, and then we'll spring up this argument again in maybe an episode or two. Just so I can, I want to get a feel for it. Like, what is it? I understand that aesthetically, some people like the way they look with glasses on. There's guys like Will DeFries who wear glasses that they don't even need with no prescriptions because they're douchebags, and that's fine. I love Will, and I love a lot of you that are probably doing the same thing, you douchebag. I still love you. But I want to hear the overall reasoning. Because if it's that you think they bug your eyes too much, like I finally got switched to these one-a-day contacts, which fuck you, my old eye doctor, who just didn't tell me those even were an option for like 10 years. I've been wearing the two-week ones, or I'm sorry, the month ones. So you take them out every night, you put them in a case, and then you put them back in the morning, and you do that for a month, and then you throw them away. Except who the fuck remembers how many days it's been or a month? I don't know. I've just been doing it wrong this whole time. Finally, I go to the eye doctor, and I just, all it took was me going, hey, so what's the deal with one-day contacts? Because those seem way easier. You just take them out and throw them away at the end of the night, and they were like, oh, yeah, you can have those. So if you don't have those, go get them. I think they're slightly more expensive, but holy shit. It's so nice to just be able to take a contact out at the end of the day and spike it against the wall or something instead of having to worry about cleaning it, putting it in a case, and then slapping it back in your eye the next day, especially if you're somebody who has terrible seasonal allergies like I do. Fuck all that noise. Get the one-a-days. But anyway, call us, 888-WR-BOLIN. For the glasses people, don't call me if you got contacts and you wear them. I want to hear from the people with glasses. I want to hear why. And I want to hear specifically why, outside of the things I already named, the aesthetic part being the main one, that you like the way you look. Okay? Next segment. Skarsgårds everywhere. So for those of you who watched, I don't know, Big Little Lies was a really great HBO show last year, 2017, I believe. True Blood was a long-running, I believe they did like 7 seasons on HBO. Or any number of other popular things this guy's been in, like movies. You're familiar with Alexander Skarsgård. He's the like 6'8", gorgeous blonde man who looks like he walked off of the set of an underwear modeling commercial and onto your TV screen. He's a good actor. A fantastic actor, it turns out, when in Big Little Lies. I don't know if he just took it to another level or True Blood was just silly as shit, which it was, for the record. Even though I did watch the entire season. Shout out to everybody out there who watched every episode of True Blood. One of the most guilty pleasure, idiotic TV shows I've ever spent time watching. I am not the guy who typically does that, who will just watch bad TV because I believe there's enough quality stuff to fill my brain with that I don't need trash. True Blood couldn't be described as anything other than trash. It was an absurd vampire show. Absolutely ridiculous. Just to give you an idea of what I'm discussing here, if you've never watched it and you don't plan on it, even if you do, this isn't a spoiler. There are points in the show where a vampire will fuck someone in fast forward. And I mean sex. Fuck, like sexually. The way the vampires have sex looks like you've hit fast forward on your remote. In super speed. That's a big element of True Blood. Ridiculous show. But point being, Alexander Skarsgård, right? He's on True Blood, Big Little Lies. First Skarsgård I've ever been aware of. Turns out, he's got a dad in Hollywood. His name is Stellan Skarsgård. And he's been in like 30 movies, including Good Will Hunting, The Hunt for Red October, Amistad, and on and on and on. He was in Nymphomaniac, for those of you who watched that two-part weird-ass movie. That was some shit. Stellan Skarsgård, if you Google his face, you'll be like, oh, shit, that guy. That's Alexander Skarsgård's dad. Then, last year, or this year, beginning of this year, maybe last year, I don't fucking remember, It, the remake of It comes out. You know, Pennywise the Clown. Very good movie. They really just riffed off of Stranger Things for the vibe of this new It, and it's badass. I love it. Good-ass movie. Well, did you know Pennywise the Clown is played by a guy named Bill Skarsgård? It's another one of Stellan Skarsgård's sons. Then there's another brother. He plays Floki in Vikings, another hit TV show. He plays Carl Strand in Westworld. These fucking Swedish Skarsgårds are taking over Hollywood and nobody's even paying attention. Now, the reason I really brought this up and wanted to do a segment about it, it's something that's been on my mind for months, weirdly enough. The Skarsgård family spend a lot of time watching their products. If you think about it in terms of like, all right, how insane is it that the Manning family has two kids who end up winning Super Bowls? They have two children of the three. It was, shout out to Cooper, by the way. Great guy. I watched a Ole Miss game, Ole Miss, Texas, sitting next to Cooper Manning in a box like 4 years ago, just completely randomly, and he couldn't have been cooler. And I was very drunk, and I appreciate him putting up with me because I was like so starstruck. Just sitting next to a Manning at all, it was like being next to a Kennedy for people from that generation. But point is, this family, the Skarsgårds, are rolling like four or six. There's even more of these people that I haven't even named. The kid, he's got like eight kids, Stellan does, from a few different chicks. He stays busy. He's got great sperm. But these fucking, it's not as if they're like, oh, you know, the Macaulay Culkin deal, like where one of them's not even really acting anymore. One of the brothers has got a couple gigs and you see them here or there, but they're not having a ton of success. These dudes are booking A-list movies and TV shows, and they're all coming from the same bloodline. It's an astonishing feat. There's actually an article on Refinery 29 that breaks all this shit down. It's called Read This and You Too Will Worship the Skarsgård Family. And it just talks about how they're one. It's like the most underrated family in Hollywood. We talk about the Kardashians, the Cyruses, the Smiths. Nobody ever mentions the fucking Skarsgårds. And really, I don't know that anybody other than the Kardashians is competing with these people. And the Kardashians don't even really count. They're fucking, that's a reality TV show makeup conglomerate. This is acting, just acting. And as an acting family, there isn't one doing it better than the Skarsgårds are right now, and they deserve credit. And they all seem like very nice people, which is even weirder. It's like, typically with situations like this, the kids are a goddamn mess and so hateable. So props to Stellan for doing a good job with his kids. And it just I wanted to acknowledge the Skarsgård family, talk a little bit about the ridiculous success they're having, and so that everybody can be aware of the fact that there probably is a Skarsgård in whatever it is you're watching right now. Here's a scary statistic. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. Even scarier is that when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's much easier to keep the hair you have than replace the hair you've lost. And that's where Hims comes in. Hims is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness just for men. Their site, forhims.com/RBP, forhims.com/RBP, will connect you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss if you think that's something that's becoming an issue for you. The site could not be easier. It's super, super easy. It takes just a few minutes. No awkward doctor visits. No hours wasted driving and sitting in waiting rooms and going to pharmacies. Prescription solutions backed by science show up directly at your door. All you have to do is go to forhims.com/RBP, answer a few quick questions.
It's so easy.
It's crazy.
Just to hop in here real quick. I've gone through this process. I am using Hims products. You take five pictures of your dome. They match you with a doctor in your state. If you qualify, which I did, the drugs show up to your house along with like shampoo and gummies for $5 on this first thing. It's an unbelievable deal. You don't have to go to the doctor. You don't have to go to the pharmacy. It just shows up at your door. It's crazy.
They prescribe you
so easy. There's no reason you shouldn't spend $5 and make this happen.
Because that's the deal you're getting. As RBP gang members, you get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. And the things you're getting for $5 would cost you hundreds and hundreds if you went to the doctor or an actual pharmacy. This is where you need to go to get the prescriptions you need and the treatment you need to keep yourself at your best. So go to forhims.com/RBP. That's forhims.com/RBP. Get that trial month of Hims for $5 today and see what it's all about. Help yourself out. Get that lettuce looking healthy. Next segment. When life lands a haymaker. So there are going to be times in life when tough things are thrown your way. It's inevitable. Whether that's something that is a more large-scale tragedy like 9/11 or something very personal that just involves you. Tragedy may strike. At the very least, and at some point in your life, you're going to have extremely bothersome problems that will arise, and you'll have to face whatever comes your way. And I personally am of the belief that these moments of great pain or terrible suffering or seemingly unbearable intensity can be the ones that shape you the most as a man or a woman. But you are going to hurt. You are going to feel alone. There are going to be times when you ask, why me, and wonder where it all went wrong. That's part of the human condition. That's part of our experience here on this planet. The important thing to understand is that while you may be in pain or you may be in crisis, you may even be in mourning, you have to maintain your outlook on the bigger picture. As you grieve or recover or fight back, it can be so difficult to maintain positivity, to maintain your principles, remember all the ways that you are blessed, and remember that the most important thing you can do with a bad situation is grow from it. And that's why it's imperative, I've spoken to this so many times, that you surround yourself with the best people possible, that you seek out good friends and maintain great relationships with friends and family. You need people in your corner. When life lands a haymaker, sometimes you can't get back up on your feet without help. And there's nothing wrong with that. Help, needing help is a natural part of life as well. You find me a human being who tells you on their deathbed that they went through life without any help at all, and I'll find you somebody who didn't accomplish shit. Surround yourself with people who will offer you support, wisdom, and care. When life lands a haymaker, it doesn't mean you're down for the count. We're getting really heavy on boxing analogies here, and that's what maybe makes boxing a compelling sport, because a boxing match can be a great microcosm for life. There are times you just want to quit, throw in the towel, or kick over the stool, or jump straight up out of the ring. But if you're ready for what is coming, if you're in a place of mental strength and fortitude, and you have the right attitude, you've prepared your mind, body, and soul appropriately, and you surround yourself with good people, you can overcome any situation. And I mean that. Any situation can be overcome and moved past. Not without great pain, not without great suffering, not without great trials and tribulations, but it can be overcome. And you can grow from it, be better because of it. Even if it means carrying a painful memory with you for the rest of your days. And I'm a firm believer that God or just life or whatever you believe, if there's a higher power out there in the universe, whatever you may believe that to be, I believe that every situation we're put into, however perilous some of those situations may be, are for a reason. And that reason is for us to grow and to overcome, to learn and to push forward. Much of life is going to be a struggle. You have to accept that and face it point blank. It's not a walk in the park. A life that's nothing but a walk in the park is not a life well lived, in my opinion. There's so much experience that comes from going through things. And to me, that's just like the most beautiful part of life. And if you refuse to find light in the dark and to gain wisdom through bad experiences or traumatic experiences, if you refuse to rise up and face the challenge and take on the day, then you will find yourself joyless, completely without happiness. And happiness is the goal for all of us, is it not? So hard times will come. You cannot let them harden your heart. Let them sharpen your mind. Instead, allow yourself to learn and grow stronger. Always keep a positive outlook, and you will live to fight another day. And today, being 9/11, it felt like an appropriate episode to address this. In the same way that we came together as a country to heal, to rebuild, to refocus in the aftermath of one of the great tragedies in our history, so must we come together, rebuild, and refocus in the aftermath of any personal tragedy or challenge or whatever life throws your way. And I've said it before, I will say it again. If at any point you find yourself feeling like you don't have anywhere to turn or anybody to talk to, for the love of God, Snapchat message me, DM me on Instagram, DM me on Twitter. I try to get through as many of those every day as I can to try to have conversations with y'all and respond to you. I feel obligated as the host of the show as the guy who's getting is fortunate enough to talk to y'all through this microphone a couple times a week every week. This is my way that I want to give back. That if you need somebody to be there for you or talk to you or try to give you advice, I will try my best to do what I can to put you in a position where hopefully things can get better. And I know Micah is in the exact same boat. So don't be afraid to hit us up, and certainly don't be afraid to lean on friends and family, and just don't, I don't want to, none of you should ever be walking around with your head down. That's like a sports thing, but it's so fucking true. And I remember my high school coach would always tell me that, like, I'd get shelled and be walking back to the dugout and he'd be like, pick your fucking head up. And I'd be like, fuck you, dude. I just got shelled. Attitude is everything. And I can't stress that enough. The your outlook is so fucking important. And as a guy who, again, I've said it before, I used to be so negative and so pessimistic. And I was always the dude who was going to point out the negatives in a situation or how things could go wrong in a situation rather than looking at the bright side. And that's no way to live. And it takes time to shape yourself and become a little bit more of an optimist. I'm definitely not an optimist, but I try to get there and I try to be a little bit better at it as often as I can. Man, your attitude and your outlook can matter so much. Just in the spirit of what today is all about, remember that. Now is the part of the show where I get to tell you that because you've listened for this many minutes down to this second, you have been saddled with two legal obligations. And if you're thinking, what? Yes, legal obligations. You're legally obligated, first, to tell one friend, family member, coworker, neighbor, anyone who you think, you know what, this person would really enjoy RBP. Tell them, I got this new podcast, the Ross Bolin Podcast. I think you'd really enjoy it. Maybe you tell them you enjoyed our thoughtful segment on 9/11 today, or that we have, you know, we try to have a positive community that laughs together but also learns things. However you want to explain it, just tell one person to give the Ross Bolin Podcast a try. Your other legal obligation is to rate and review. I hope you're already subscribed. You should be. If you're not, please do. But go in there. Take 20 seconds to give us a 5-star rating and write a quick review. It's your legal obligation. If you don't do it, you'll hear from our lawyers. Stand up and get it done, RBP gang. It's not a joke. It's very real. The lawyers will come. I get the bill. You have to go to court. It's hell. So simple. Let's avoid it all. One friend, family member, coworker, one person every week. One person. That's all it takes. You got to tell one person. You can tell them through Twitter. Tell them through Snapchat. Tell them through a text message. A lot of y'all send me examples of you doing your legal obligation, and I throw it up in our Instagram story, and I very much appreciate that. Thank you to everybody who continues to do this. You are the reason the show continues to grow and our community gets a little bigger, and hopefully the world gets a little better and we can enjoy ourselves. So fulfill those legal obligations for me. Follow the show on Instagram at the Ross Bolin Podcast and on Twitter at Ross Bolin Pod. You can follow me, Ross Bolin, on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at WR Bolin. I should mention the podcast is also on Facebook, but again, I don't think anybody really cares. I'm on twitch.com/BossRolin. I got to do something pretty cool the other night out of nowhere. I played Fortnite with, what the fuck is it? Carlos Correa and Lance McCullers Jr. I just had a total brain fart. But Carlos Correa, being a perennial all-star, almost certainly going to get paid like $300 billion when his fucking contract is up. And I hope by us and not the Yankees. We'll see. But Correa and Correa's little brother, who plays baseball at Lamar University, and Lance McCullers Jr., who is a pitcher on the Houston Astros, the World Series champion Houston Astros, they all played Fortnite with me. It was cool as shit. It was like one of the most surreal things I've ever gotten to do. And I've gotten to do a lot of cool stuff as a result of my career. This was up there with the coolest of the cool. It's definitely top five, playing, which is so fucking silly, playing Fortnite with the Correa brothers and Lance McCullers Jr. But go watch the stream. You can check out the whole thing still on twitch.com/BossRolin, BossRolen. Also add Grand X Media on Twitch. We have a new gaming podcast called Grand X Gaming, where Jared Borslow and I are putting out episodes every week onto Grand X Labs. That's where it's being hosted at the moment. Same place that RBP started out. It's our experimental podcast channel here at Grand X, Grand X Labs. So subscribe to that and give Grand X Gaming a listen. That's where we talk about gaming. Jared and I are going to do a lot more streaming. We're going to be getting a lot more celebrities and professional athletes and people of that nature to play video games with us on Twitch, and we're going to have fun with it. Micah, where can the members of the RBP gang follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Micah Weiner, MicahWiener, and I'll just take one moment to thank everyone who has reached out to me this past weekend. I was in New Orleans, as I announced on last week's episode, and the amount of feedback that I got via Twitter and especially Instagram DMs was almost overwhelming. Everyone has restaurant recommendations. Everyone told me what to order. Thank you to everyone. I enjoy that. New Orleans is the best.
How's NOLA?
It's great. It's the same as it always is. It's dirty and wet and moist and kind of gross and like a little exciting.
Yeah.
And classic. And you never know when just disgusting water is going to drip on your head for no reason.
Yes.
And it rained on it. It was perfect. My girlfriend and I, obviously I've been training for this cage fight for the past 4 months. And I was like, I promise you, we will get out of here. We're going to go take a vacation. We took a weekend to New Orleans. We had a wonderful time. We ate and drank everything. And it was fun. I like it there.
There's three cities I've been to where the likelihood of you getting hit in the head with an unknown liquid from a building it happens all the time. And it's New Orleans is definitely number one. I don't know why. Every building is shooting out water. New York City was number two. When I was wandering around like Times Square and shit, I kept getting hit by things. And I was like, well, that was just probably pee. It was just a human just pissed somewhere. And it came through a pipe and like hit me in the head. Chicago is the other one. But New Orleans, far and away, I it's so funny because I used to fucking despise the city of New Orleans because I would always go there, black out, ruin my life, and feel terrible for like a week. Well, since I quit drinking, it's become one of my favorite cities in the country. Once you remove alcohol from the equation, it's just a super, and that's just for me. I'm not saying any of you need to do that. New Orleans is a great place to get fucked up. But for me, once I removed alcohol from the equation and made it into like a cultural experience, it's one of the best cities we've got.
That's fantastic.
It's a cool ass place.
Yeah, we sort of did the opposite. We planned to go see stuff and go to the museums and, you know, go on a tour. And we ended up just started drinking beer at noon and just never stopped for the rest of the weekend. But
you earned that, man.
It was great. We had a great time. We had fun at Harrah's. We did all the things. We ate all the great meals. And I just thanks to everybody who reached out with suggestions. And we took people up on them. We had a great time. So
was it the first time you've been to Harrah's post banning of cigarettes?
That's a good question. I don't remember, because the last time I was there was about a year ago, and I don't remember.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was already banned at that point.
If it was banned or not,
dude, I just like I always remember the first time I walked into Harrah's post ban, and it was like a totally different place.
It's a different world, yeah.
It kind of weirded me out, and I used to rip cigarettes at the crafts table like crazy, so I was pissed the first time I went back and they didn't have it anymore. But I don't know, man. I'm torn.
It does seem weird that there is a smoking ban in New Orleans, even though there's got to only be like non-smoking bans. Like smoking's basically illegal everywhere now, which
except
is great.
Vegas, where you can still smoke.
Vegas
whatever.
Vegas is a different animal, I guess. But like New Orleans feels like it's enough of a different animal because you can just walk. It feels so lawless.
It is.
You can just
mostly
walk around with drinks everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Like I feel like you can do literally anything you want. There's Napoleonic law, which nobody really knows what that means.
Nobody
but it's
knows.
Fun to say. And anyway, I love New Orleans, and thanks to all of the gang for reaching out. And your comments on my Instagram are appreciated as well.
New Orleans.
I haven't had to delete many of them for being lewd this time.
That's
so
good.
Most of them are just gang squared or gang.
Those
or,
are great.
Yeah, they really are nice.
Gang
they
cubed.
Really nice.
Not
gang,
squared.
That's
cubed.
Right, cubed.
You got to get that third one in there. You're just some other show. But yeah, the...
And then, of course, you know, I've mentioned this on Touching Base, and I apologize. I'm going to say it again. Mark Allen is... I don't know if he's primarily a toucher or a gang member. I know he follows both on Instagram. He helped me out with amazing suggestions. He told the wait staff or the ownership of the restaurant we went to Saturday night that we were coming. They rolled out the red carpet for us. And he bought us a bottle of champagne.
Holy shit.
He's just a true king.
Who's
and
this
so
guy? Mark
I've thanked
Allen?
Him. Mark Allen is his name. I've thanked him on Touching Base, and now I've thanked him here just to make sure he's listening on both. I can't
articulate how much it means. It was very, very nice.
Classy move, Mark.
Very classy.
Way to go. And that's, King. Dude, that's exactly the type of thing I'm talking about. Like,
that's
just
what we need more
that's
of.
That's what
world.
We need more of. Let's get
Not
more.
Not just me getting free stuff, but people well, helping
too,
other people.
But also, yes, yeah, no, it doesn't have to benefit Micah and I. That shouldn't. That's not what I meant. I meant doing things for other people to make them feel special, that they'll remember, that'll make their day, their week, or whatever. Oh, by the way, speaking of which, yesterday was like National Grandparents Day or something. I wasn't aware of that they were trying to make one day, which I find to be absurd. As we all know, the entire month of October, what was it? What month just passed? Not October.
August.
God, I suck at calendars. August was Call Your Grandparents Month. They just didn't know that, apparently. They still got this other holiday on the calendar. But, hey, it's just another good reason to call your fucking grandparents. Be sure to go to rowdygentleman.com. Check out our whole line. We're going to be trying to drop new shirts more and more frequently. RBP is not the code. That is the podcast you are listening to. The code is Eat Fresh, EATFRESH at checkout for 15% off. Thank you for listening. Remember what today is all about. Hold each other close. Call your friends and family. Hang out. Be good to each other. We will catch you next time on episode 81. Man, that's blowing my mind. RBP 81 next. Peace be with you and also with you.